I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 178 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network. And also Fanatics. We've held off over the last week or so in regards to getting our first summer podcast out. But unfortunately, we're here Sunday morning, Father's Day, and I think it's time to record. Although, as we all know, Bill Kenwright still remains at the club, but there has been a lot of change and a lot of news out of Goodison Park over the last 5-6 days or so. The biggest one and the best place to start has got to be the boardroom changes that were brought about on Monday. Statement came out, it was at 5 o'clock Monday, to confirm that Denise Barrett Baxendale, Grant Ingalls and Graham Sharp had all been removed from the board and left the roles within the board of Everton Football Club, and that an interim board would be appointed, and we should expect an announcement and a statement in 48 hours in regards to that, and also the future of Chairman Bill Kenwright. As we all know, there's been no update, but let's go back to the original point, Pete. We were expecting these changes, weren't we? You know, we know what happened over the course of the second half of last season, the fan protests, when the final whistle went against Bournemouth after the initial 10 seconds of relief and jubilation. There was then the calls for sack the board, you're not fit to run the club, etc., etc. So we expected these changes to occur, probably not as quickly as they did, to be honest with you. I think a lot of us thought that maybe that first week after the final game of the season, we would see movement. We didn't. We did get the confirmation that, as I say, the three individuals had left the board as of Monday, just gone. What's your take on that? Are you surprised by it? Did you expect it? Has it come later than you thought?
I'm not surprised by it. I think that the thing I am surprised by, which we'll come on to in a minute, is I suppose that some of them have gone and one of them hasn't or hasn't as yet. And, you know, that is arguably strange. I think it's a real statement of how much the fans' trust in the club has been absolutely decimated, given that these changes at board level have been needed. I mean, often your chairman and your owner are kind of like the kernel on the bucket, so to speak. You know, they're kind of the figureheads for the club, and if things aren't going right, you know, they kind of become the target of, you know, the ire and the need for change. And you know, with not just with football clubs, but often with big organisations, a lot of that change is kind of performative, isn't it? They just kind of change the face on the bucket and things don't really change that much. So the fact that you know, the fans have an awareness of things playing out at a board level and that such systemic change has been necessary, I just think is a statement of what terrible trouble we've been in and just how bad the relationship's become between, you know, the fans and the club. I feel like the fans are kind of the last bit of glue holding Everton together, and the right people just need to kind of rally around and help us rebuild. So it's absolutely necessary that, you know, Baxendale, Ingles and Sharp have had to go. And I just think the way the club handled some of the things that were kind of, you know, some of the accusations that were levied toward the fans was, you know, really, really poor. You know, they essentially turned on the fans, which, you know, I don't want to drag up the past, but it's the recent past, and it's important in understanding where we are now. And I think it's a really important lesson the club need to learn. And that lesson can only come through mass systemic change. So it's absolutely the right call, but I think everyone's kind of waiting for the last bit of this change to drop. And until that point, you know, we can't move forward. We can't focus on the future, can we?
Totally agree. I think you know, the final piece in the jigsaw to fall, obviously Bill Kenwright is still there. And until that particular point, as a club, as fans, we can't look to move forward. That seems to be holding up a lot of things, the fact that Bill Kenwright is still obviously at the club. And, you know, we do expect further movements on that, of course. But isn't it just, you know, typical of Everton Football Club to release their own statements on the Monday to confirm the removal of the three board members and then give their own deadline and not stick to it? It's typical of the way that we feel the club has been run in recent times and says it all really. But Lee, what's your thoughts on things there in regards to the three board members that have gone? Obviously, Graeme Sharp, Denise Barrett, Baxendale and Grant Ingles have all left the club. And we find ourselves now with solely Bill Kenwright as the only surviving board member. What's your opinion in terms of the removal of those three? Did it come as quickly as you thought it would?
Well, yeah, I think to be fair, it was long overdue. I think a lot of us as fans, let's be honest, expected that decision to be made pretty much after the last game of the season, didn't we? So the fact it was delayed a little bit further than that probably irked a few people. But for me, the main thing is, you know, process or progress is being made. And let's be honest, the vast majority of us fans aren't stupid. You know, most of us have been campaigning for it. The club definitely needs change from the very top in order to change the culture, change, you know, pretty much everything how it's run. You know, modern day football now, you can't get away with like a theatre impresario running your club, can you? Let's be honest. You know, most of the successful clubs out there now really, you know, are well organised, well run. I mean, you know, I know City aren't the best example, but basically state owned and have some of the best people in football behind the scenes. But they're the first, you know, for the first time now, they've won the treble and you can't see them slowing down. But if you look at that, that's having the blueprint from the very start, isn't it? And then having a plan and working towards it. And I've mentioned it before, you've seen other teams in the league on way less budgets, like your Brentfords and your Brightons, again, just well-oiled machines. So for me, I think, you know, Bill's the last piece of the jigsaw now, isn't he? And I think it's only a matter of time before he does go. And obviously the time he's been at the club and everything else, it'll be a pretty momentous occasion, but it needs to happen. Some of the replacements that have been mooted in The Athletic and other papers as well. You know, let's see what happens. I mean, that'll be very interesting to see who we actually do bring in. You know, as big a news as these guys go in, it'll be, for me, very interesting to see who Farhad brings in on the board. Now, obviously, with MSP Capital coming in, it's going to be people linked to them, isn't it? Because they're going to demand seats on the board as part of the deal. And that's pretty normal. That's normal in business, isn't it? So I don't know what you boys think, but I just think we need people who come in with far more business acumen, who know how to run, you know, a sizable business, because that's what we are now.
Well, most definitely. And obviously where we are today, I think that there's still that element of limbo, really, isn't it? And until that final the final Pearson Falls, then, as I said earlier on, we just can't look to move forward, and the fans can't look to sort of reset. And, you know, it's boardroom bingo in a way, because we're hearing so many names. Obviously, we've had the three outgoing. We believe, obviously, Bill Kenwright will also be gone as well. You mentioned, obviously, MSP Capital will bring their own people in, which they will, to have their own representation. You've then got local businessmen George Downen and Andy Bell are the favourites to be given the places on the board. So it just seems a little bit, yet again, the way we've gone about our business is for me, very amateur. You know, it should have been a crystal clear decision that's being made. They've all gone. I know, obviously, there's, don't get me wrong, there's legal ramifications with anything like this. But if you've got four outgoing board members, then you replace them with whatever. So it's seamless. They come in at the same time. You then meet all the requirements of the set, obviously, as a business. And Everton, yet again, haven't done that. Now, again, if reporters were to be believed, Bill Kenwright offered his resignation on Monday, and it was Farhad Moshiri who said, well, just hold fire. Let's have a conversation. You know, other people believe different, that this isn't the case, and it's Bill Kenwright dragging his heels. But whatever the situation, it's got to be rectified sooner rather than later, because we can't keep going on. You know, time's ticking. Let's get it right. We know the season's over. We know the players are back for pre-season shortly, you know, another sort of 2 or 3 weeks, and they're going to be back in. And we're still sitting in a scenario where we haven't obviously replaced outgoing board members. The investment from MSP Capital hasn't yet officially been signed off. So, you know, it's not a great look for the club, really, is it, Pete? The fact that, you know, maybe potentially players who are looking for new clubs. Now, we know Everton are going to be fishing in the free transfer markets and the loan markets especially. But it's not a good look for you know, players coming in, and they think, well, hang on, they haven't even got a board. The unrest between fans and club is still there. And it's, you know, when you're trying to attract players to this football club after having two terrible seasons that we've been fighting relegation, we don't need another reason for players not to sign, do we?
No, definitely. And look, the best evidence of this is January. Look at what happened in January. We're in the mix for the same players that Nottingham Forest, Southampton and Bournemouth were scrapping with us for, and we lost. And I just think that's unbelievable for, you know, a club of Everton's size. If you're offering players like that contracts, and you know, those players don't believe in the vision that is Everton Football Club. If, you know, if IU is turning us down to go to Nottingham Forest, that for me is, you know, it's mind blowing. And that's not just because, you know, again, my Everton bias. I think probably the vast majority of, you know, football fans would see it that way as well. You know, we're a football giant. And I just think the club need to learn the lesson, because, you know, we're already into pre-season. We need to make a fast start in regards to transfers, because the rebuild job is glaring. You know, we'll come on to it in a minute, but the amount of key players that we need, and potentially there could be one or two massive outgoings. You know, there could be at least one that I think probably most people are expecting, but I think the vultures are circling around some of our prized assets. And again, if we don't get things in order, what, you know, why would those players stay? You know, why would they offer the loyalty if we've not got our own house in order? Because we've not got the basics, we've not got the fundamentals. And this is an opportunity for the club to be really sharp, isn't it? And like you said earlier, Mike, again and again, we don't seem to be learning the lessons. You know, key complaint from the fans has been about communication. You know, you've not kept to your deadline. Communicate to the fans. You know, just put something out there. Find a way to not reassure people, but let people know what's going on, because otherwise it just drives anxiety. And if it's driving anxiety in the fan base, it's going to be filtering through elsewhere as well. And I completely agree with you. You know, how do you sell Everton as a desirable vision other than clinging onto the coattails of, you know, the new stadium at Bramley Moor? And I don't know about you, I think one reason I continually go for a little visit to Bramley Moor, usually with you, Mike, is it gives me something more positive to focus on than what's going on at Goodison Park, because it's a complete mess. And you get frustrated, don't you? Because you think, you know, look, how long is it going to take you, Everton, to learn this lesson and sort it out? And every time they seem to, you know, move in the right direction or suggest they're doing the right thing, you think, oh, okay, you know, finally, this nightmare could be over and next season could be different. They kind of undermine themselves by making a mess of it or not getting it quite right. So you feel like going down and shaking people, don't you?
I think that's some really good points there, Pete. It's not just unbelievable, like you said, that we were linked with players that were linked with those sort of teams, and the likes of IU turned us down apparently to go to Forest. You know, and you look at the Dan Juma saga as well and the farce that happened there. You know what I mean? I mean, the lad ended up going to Spurs and playing, like, you know, what, probably less than 90 minutes of football in the Premier League. It's unacceptable, as well as being unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? And the club is just, you know, there's rumours, obviously, a lot of rumours come out in the last few days about Alex Iwobi being linked, you know, apparently making noises saying he wants to go and play with a Champions League club. Now, I know Alex has divided opinion amongst the fan base, but I think most of us fans, certainly us on this podcast, have really, you know, respected what he's given us the last 2 years. I think he's been one of our best players. And if you look at the stats, he's certainly been one of our most creative players. But if I'm Alex Iwobi now, I've just had two absolute stressful seasons at the wrong end of the table. You know, I'm no longer playing under Carlo, competing for a European place. I'm scrapping at the bottom end of the league. You know, we've sold some of our best players. You know, since Alex in the last 2 years there, you know, the likes of Richarlison's gone, the likes of you know, Luca Dean has gone. You know, even the likes of James and all that. You know, you've gone from playing with those players to suddenly playing with Neil Mope. You know what I mean? So if I'm Alex Iwobi, they're thinking the club haven't even, you know, the board directors have walked, the chairman's actually going, there's no rumours about who's coming in, okay, you know, there's no definitive answer who's coming in. I'd be on the phone to my agent going, get me out of here. I don't want another 12 months of stress, you know, fighting at the wrong end of the table. And you know, fans can give him jip if he said that or not. But at the end of the day, you know, he's got a finite career as a footballer. Why would he want to stay another year at our club at the minute? You know, he's an Arsenal fan. He's not an Everton fan. He's from London, you know what I mean? So for him, he's probably thinking, if I can try and find a club competing in Europe, you know, once if someone like West Ham came in for him now, he'd probably go. You know what I mean? Because, you know, as much as we'd hate to say that, you know, they've just come off the back of having one of the best nights in their history. And you can take the mick out of the, you know, whatever cup they've won. But, you know, that we'd have that as fans, wouldn't we? We'd love that, an away day, winning a trophy like that, regardless of how minuscule it is. You know, those scenes of David Moyes running on the pitch there, I know, again, it divided opinion. I was happy for him. I was ecstatic for him because, you know what, fair play. He's nearly lost his job and he's taken West Ham to a European final and won it. You know what I mean? And so even if someone like them came in for Iwobi now, he'd probably go. And that's a sad indictment of where we are now. Like you said, Pete, not getting your house in order, not having a clear definitive plan means that players are going to start looking elsewhere. Apparently, Pickford's come out, hasn't he, and said, I love the club, I want to stay. To be honest, that for me could be noise leaked by his agent and everything else, saying that, yeah, the club sold me, I didn't want to leave. Because I can pretty much say now, I'd be very surprised if Jordan Pickford starts first game of the season for us. Rumours again, he was linked with United yesterday. Spurs will need a new keeper. You know, let's be honest, he's one of the main reasons why we've stayed up, isn't it, in the last 2 years. He's been outstanding. Excuse me. And Onana, you know, that's pretty much, we all know that he'll probably be going. Arsenal heavily linked with him. Chelsea are linked with him. Yeah, I could see that happening. But it worries me because, you know, you sell Gordon for 40 million, good deal. You sell Richarlison, you sell all these players, and yet we barely reinvested it back into the squad. You know, if Pickford goes and Onana goes, there's another 100 million potentially between the two of them. Would you be confident that's going to go directly on players to replace, you know, to improve the squad? I'm not, based on what we've seen from the sale of some of the other guys. So, you know, people forget the Moyes Keane money as well. You know what I mean? That, throw that in the mix. That's another, you know, 28 million, whatever it was, or 25 million. So it really concerns me. We've got the Premier League all over us as well in terms of, you know, our finances. It massively worries me in terms of we've escaped by the skin of our teeth the last two seasons, and then potentially going to go into the new league with a just as weak squad, if not weaker. And I know that's, you know, we don't know yet the window, you know, with the window and everything else. But you know what I mean? It looks at the moment we haven't got a house in order whatsoever. You know, how much money we even got to spend, no one even knows. None of us know. Got no clue. So it does concern me when you see other teams around us who are only going to get stronger. They're only going to get stronger, aren't they?
Well, the frightening thing is that we could go into the first game of the season at home to Fulham with a weaker squad than we had on the last game of the season against Bournemouth. And in that game, we only named 8 substitutes. And I think two of them were young kids and two of them were substitute goalkeepers. So we could go into that game in a worse state, which is frightening to think, really, if you think about it. And then because the start 11 that we had against Bournemouth, out of that, Connor Cody and Yerry Mina have already gone. So there's two players who arguably, you know, would be starting or could start the new season. And it's what do we do between now and obviously the first game of the season. And that's where the whole situation surrounding the board and surrounding the message that it's actually given. You know, if you're issuing a statement as a club, given a deadline and a time frame, then you stick to it. If they would have come out and said last Monday, like, these three board members have gone, there'll be announcements in due course in regards to the future of Chairman Bill Kenwright and an interim board. If they would have come up with that and said in due course or whatever and give themselves longer, then that would have been, I'd say, would have been fine. Obviously, we know Bill Kenwright has to leave the club, but that would have made more sense and he would have covered their own back, more importantly. That's the biggest thing. Don't give a deadline of 48 hours and then expect to not release any kind of statements, because all the noises on Wednesday were it's coming, you know, it's going to be here 5 o'clock at the latest, never came, and they just go about the business as normal, as if it's okay. And then you start to get publications releasing their own stories, which obviously are coming from certain people from within the club about reasons why. And, you know, I saw one this morning, I think the Sunday Mirror was the one he was quoted saying, if Bill Kenwright goes, then it's bad news for Sean Dyche, and Sean Dyche could be facing the sack. And you're getting these kind of stories now. So yet again, whether that's true or not, which I seriously doubt it, you know, Sean Dyche, as we all know, deserves massive credit for doing what he did last season and keeping us up, and deserves a chance to build his own side. Whether it's true or not, yet again, as a player, if you're looking to come to a new club and you see that, what are you going to think? Are you going to want to come there? Because I wouldn't do if I was a footballer. I would want to come into this circus, because Everton just can't get their own house in order to allow us to move forward.
Well, we're an easy target in a minute for the press, aren't we? Yeah, that article in the week, Lindsay wrote it, the guy from The Guardian was a disgrace, by the way. Absolute disgrace. You know, commenting on... I don't know whether it was Andy Hunter. I think it was another guy. When Hunter wrote the recent one, which was, again, scathing, but there was a lot of truth in it. But it was just a disgrace. It was almost like, yeah, Everton have already been done by the FFP police, you know, by the Premier. They've already been, you know, there's loads of assumptions in it. You know, nothing's even started in that proceeding yet, are they? There'll be a lot of investigation that needs to go on. And it was almost like, yeah, these clubs are suing Everton again. You know, they're suing Everton, Leeds, Burnley, all of them, all suing Everton. And it was just like, again, you know, pathetic journalism. But the thing is, we're an easy target at the minute because obviously we're in such a mess, you know. And, you know, I think the reason why Bill hasn't gone as yet is, I think there's probably a couple of reasons. Okay, these are just obviously speculation, but I think, have they got someone definitively lined up yet? I don't think they have. You know, like you said, there's rumours with Andy from AJ Bell, big Evertonian, very successful local businessman. You know, if he came in, you know, to lend his support to the board, his knowledge, then I wouldn't be too averse to that. You know what I mean? He's clearly a very commercially savvy guy. What can he attract? Clearly loves the club. Big, like I said, a big blue. But I think one of the other reasons being mentioned is the fact that Bill's still got shares, isn't he, in the club. And obviously Farhad is committed to buying those off, and by all accounts, they have some sort of agreement. The thing is, even if he has got shares, he can still step down as chairman. You know what I mean? So I think that puts that one to bed. But I generally think, I don't think they've got anyone concrete lined up. And again, how long have they had? They knew this was going to happen. The board of directors, or the directors who've walked so far, Anvil, they haven't been at a game since January. So you'd have think again, you'd have thought again, this would all be lined up. Now, maybe is this delayed because of the MSP capital thing? Because that's not quite gone through yet. Are they waiting for that to go through? Again, we're filling in the gaps ourselves, aren't we, as fans? Because there's no communication. Like you said there, Mike, self-imposed 48-hour deadline. Why have you done that to yourselves? Why? Makes no sense. You're basically setting yourself up potentially to fail again. Like you said there, just say in due course, we expect Bill to, or whatever words you want to choose. And again, it just makes them look really, really amateurish. And this is what we want as change. If these people come in, we just want us run in a really efficient manner. It's not too late. We can improve the squad. We can go out and be savvy in the market, and we can go into the first game of the season, hopefully with a squad. And hopefully, that will compete maybe for sort of mid-table, maybe possibly European places. It is quite tight. It's not as if the others are miles ahead of us. If we're savvy in this window, we could build a squad around that. We certainly need a couple of strikers. Not Vaut, of course, please. But you know what I'm saying? The gap isn't huge, is it, between there and sort of maybe, eighth, ninth or something like that, for that little leap that we need to make to get back up there competing. We just need to basically make sure we the next couple of months, we say it all the time, but the next couple of months is crucial, in terms of incomings and outgoings. The worrying thing is for me, they've not snapped up Cody on that. And I know, again, he's split opinion, but if we're worried about $4.5 million, and I know his wages were about 80 grand or something like that, maybe that was a reason as well. But that worries me a little bit that, we're not getting someone like him in, certainly in the dressing room. You know what I mean? For his leadership ability, $4.5 million in today's market is like nothing, is it? It's an absolute, for a Premier League club, that's absolutely peanuts. So maybe that does worry me a little bit, thinking that, are we that cautious? Are we selling that close to the wind that we can't even, go and commit and bring this lad in? Or is it a negotiation tactic with Wolves? Don't know. Maybe we'll go back in for him. Again, we don't know. But something needs sorting in the next week or so, just so we can go into the transfer window and into pre-season looking like we're resembling a football club.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, if we don't go back in for Connor Cody, which certainly is not on the cards at the moment, there was talk yesterday of also Sean Dyche being undecided in regards to Mason Holgate, Ben Godfrey and Michael Keane. So we could be going into the first game of the season with about two centre-halves. And one of them includes a returning Jarrod Branthwaite. So it's I think what it tells you is, as a club, and all the noise coming out of the club, is they just don't know what sort of direction we're going to have to take from a financial perspective in terms of what players we're going to have to move on. I mean, looking at the contract situation for next season, you mentioned Alex Iwobi, he goes into his final year, so he's out of contract in 2024. So there's been a new contract on the table for a long, long time, a new five-year deal for Alex Iwobi. It's not being signed. Understandably so, I suppose, from the player's perspective. The club are obviously keen to keep him. But if it gets to the point where nothing's being signed as the summer transfer window goes on, then do not be surprised if Alex Iwobi is moved on, because Everton can't afford then to lose money on a player who's going to go into the last year of his contract, because obviously from the January, he can sign a pre-contract with another club anyway and go for three in the summer. So Everton, I'm sure, will be keen not to do that. You then look, obviously, Decore signing you a new deal, didn't he? So he's got a further year. Ellis Sims' contract is up in 2024. A lot of talk around him, potentially Sunderland back in the mix of him. I think I saw Ipswich as well the other day. A lot of people, fans, thinking that maybe if we go in for the current Coventry striker, Jokeres, that maybe Ellis Sims could form part of that particular deal. Who knows? So there's a few players there that are going to the last year. But in terms of outgoings, Pete, we've mentioned obviously a few there. The most saleable assets from a financial perspective are Amadou Onana and Jordan Pickford. Obviously, with Onana, there's a sell-on clause, 20% to Lille. You'd assume that's 20% of the profits. That tends to be standard when it comes to sell-on clauses. So there's him. A lot of talk around Arsenal-Chelsea. Like Lee said, obviously, Jordan Pickford, Manchester United. I think Tottenham, from what I saw from Fabrizio Romano, put out that they've got that David Raya from Brentford, that's all sewn up and done. So he's going to come in and replace Hugo Lloris at Spurs. So the only real destination for Jordan Pickford in this country, you would say, would be Manchester United, because all the talk is obviously of De Gea going. Obviously, I mean, Onana, I think, has split opinion a little bit. I think he's got a high ceiling. I think, you know, such a young kid, he can go on and do really, really big things. But to focus solely on Jordan Pickford, like Lee said, if it wasn't for him, the last two seasons, we probably would have gone down, because Pickford, I think, has been terrific. How much of a loss would he be to Everton Football Club if Everton said, well, you know, £45-50 million, which is being muted today, is a lot of money. We're going to take it on you go. How much of a loss would that be if we actually decided to move Jordan Pickford on?
I mean, I don't want to be catastrophic about it, but I think at this stage, it doesn't bear thinking about. I think what Lee said earlier was spot on. I mean, number one, £45 million for Jordan Pickford is daylight robbery. You know, I'm sorry if he went for anything less than, you know, a deal going up to 70, I would feel very annoyed. But then it's also, you know, how much of that money are we going to see? How much of that money is going to be reinvested in the squad? And what are you losing? You're losing one of the best goalkeepers in the world. You know, I know again, it's another football cliche, but you know, your number one behind your back four is you kind of your first and last bastion of stability. And I know his mistakes get highlighted. I think our feeling on this podcast is Jordan Pickford's an easy target and tends to get scrutinised a lot more than other goalkeepers. You know, there are a number of times I can pluck off the top of my head where both Aaron Ramsdale and Nick Pope made really high-profile mistakes in big games. And, you know, there wasn't a whiff of negative press coverage in the same way that Jordan Pickford gets absolutely hounded and the same clip gets played over and over again in slow motion and, you know, scrutinised over. Whereas his world-class saves gets, you know, no acknowledgement whatsoever. But I think you're both absolutely spot on. He has kept us up. He's a massive leader. And I think, you know, how he's developed at the club, you know, in terms of his leadership, his maturity, his, you know, his all-round game, I think it's really commendable. And I just think it would be a huge loss. You know, like you were saying just then, given how threadbare our squad is, you know, the potential loss of really key players, the recent loss of really key players, the last thing that we need is to lose Jordan Pickford. And if we did, I'm not confident that we would be able to replace him with enough quality to make us strong enough for next season. So, you know, I'd rather keep him for another 1 or 2 years and him go for less money than for him to go this season for 45, 50 million, which I think would be like cutting off one of our arms.
I think it's not inconceivable right now that there would be that much change. It won't be far off almost a Notts Forest situation. You know what I mean? Where there's obviously it won't be as bad as that. A lot of them were loan players for them, but you know what I mean? That type of scenario where we end up almost having a, you know, 40% of our squad have left and been replaced. You know, when you're being linked with the likes of Morales from Rangers and things like that, you know, he's obviously a talented kid, but he's clearly a nut job. Then you're just thinking like, you know, I mean, you mentioned Goikieras there of Coventry. I think that I know we were linked with him last season. In the end, we didn't want to pay what Coventry were asking for, and rumours are we're going in now trying to get him for around 15. Now that for me would be, you know, in the ponds we're fishing in, a clever signing. You know what I mean? Because he's got a lot of similar attributes to Calvert-Lewin. He's clearly a good, you know, a goal scorer. Okay, the big question mark is, can he do it in the Premier League? That's always a risk. But when you look at his attributes and things like that, that would be a sensible signing, wouldn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, the amount of times when Calvert-Lewin was out and we couldn't replace like for like, well, that would be a clever signing. So, you know, for me now, look how other clubs operate. I know we're hindered by finances, but we should be going straight in there and sealing that off before everybody else gets involved. You know, if the player is a talented kid, I could see other clubs going in for him as well. And that'll probably be the case. So we run the risk again of being rejected for not getting a house in order. So for me, things like that, those sort of signings need to happen and just give the fans some confidence and some faith that we're doing business early. You know, we went into last season, the start of last season, if you remember, guys. It was a mess, wasn't it? We didn't have a centre forward for the first few games. And then eventually, after you know, we ended up panicked by Neil Mopay. I think all the eggs were in the basket for Brozier from Chelsea, wasn't it? Again, we've been linked with him again. Potentially, you know, and in the end that fell through, and then we ended up panicked buying Neil Mopay, which we all know that turned out an absolute disaster. So, it just doesn't fill me with confidence. Like we've said earlier in the podcast here, you know, if you're a player either at our club or being linked with our club right now, you'd be looking at it going, do I want to go and play there? Do I really want to go and play there? You know, they just don't look well run. There's a lot of anxiety around the fan base. They've had two horrendous seasons. Yeah, okay, yeah, they've got the stadium they're going to and everything else. You could sell that to them, but it's a million miles away from basically Carlo Ancelotti ringing you up going, do you want to come and play for Everton? I've got some, you know, world-class players here, isn't it, in 2 years. You know, someone phones you up and says, do you want to come and play for Everton? And you're Carlo Ancelotti. Well, you know, the phone call doesn't last any more than 2 minutes, does it? You're already there. So, you know, it's a very different scenario now. And that's how far we've fallen in the last 2 years. You know, if you constantly don't reinvest in your squad, and I know we are hindered by finances, and that's a big reason why as well, but it's only a matter of time. You know, we've got lucky twice. I can't see us getting lucky three times unless we sort it out.
And that's a concern, isn't it? Is that, you know, going into the first few games of the season, obviously fixtures have been released over the last few days or so. Home games to start with, brilliant. Fulham at home, you've got to be happy with that. Difficult trips, obviously, to Aston Villa. You know, we don't play Arsenal in the fifth game. But we've got games, you know, those first four games especially, which, I mean, it sounds awful to say, you know, and really you shouldn't say it, but you would class them as games that are winnable. And, you know, we know how this goes when you do say things like that, and Everton's never simple. But, you know, home to Fulham, away to Villa, home to Wolves, away to Sheffield United. So those first four games, Villa probably being the toughest task there, given the job that Unai Emery has done since he's come in, got them European football. Then you look at that and you think Everton can't afford to give up points yet again at the start of a season. We've got to have the squad at a point on that first game of the season on the 12th of August, where there might be one, maybe two squad places left to fill, but you're going to go in there with you know, better quality than what you ended the season with against Bournemouth. Otherwise, you know, the transfer window closes before that Sheffield United game, which is the 2nd of September. Those first three games, you could be giving up points, and Everton are not in a position where they can afford to do that. Every single game is vital. As I say, those two first home games, you know, they're both winnable games. You know, even with last season's squad, I know I'd still, on the first game of the season, I'd still fancy us to have a good go at Fulham and potentially pick up 3 points. Now, we've lost numerous players from that squad already. The squad was already unbalanced and not packed full of quality. If you imagine losing Jordan Pickford before that game and then having to go with Andy Lonergan or Jao Virginia, who's come back from loan. Imagine, because it's feasible. You know, imagine you've not replaced Yerry Mina. Imagine that you maybe Onana's gone or he's in the throes of a transfer move and you go into the game without him in the squad. Imagine Calvert-Lewin's injured. You know, it's all feasible. If we wait and wait and wait and wait because of the position that we find ourselves in, which obviously is yet again another indictments about how poorly this board has operated and how poorly we've been run as a football club. If we go into that game and those first three or four games with a poor side and give up points, we're going to find ourselves in serious, serious trouble yet again. And it sounds, you know, people might think that's slightly overreactive, but we've had two seasons of this absolute nonsense. And the manager deserves backing for what he's done. He deserves support in terms of in the transfer market. And he deserves a chance to build a squad that's more balanced and players that fit into his system. Because let's get it right, at times, under Sean Dyche, we were much more of an attacking threat than we were under Frank Lampard. You know, whether that's because we were better organised at set pieces, you know, we were doing the simpler things better. But I know the Brighton game was an anomaly, but there's other games where Everton created chances, and a lot of chances. Should have really scored more goals if we had more quality. So, you know, we just, I dread to think what happens, and, you know, the fact that we're having to wait to sell players to actually then make our moves, because we know that these things can drag on. There's no guarantee that if we do say, right, we're going to sell Onana to whoever, there's no guarantee that happens before pre-season. There's no guarantee it happens, you know, before August. It could go on to the last week of the transfer window. And yet again, like you said, Lee, you know, we find ourselves fishing in certain markets and panicking and bringing in players that really don't offer anything to the quality of the squad. And
you just got to hope Thelwell and him are joined at the hip here, haven't we? The biggest thing, one of the biggest reasons we're in this mess is you know, successive managers wanting to bring in their own players and not working with the directors of football. Obviously, Marcel Brands before, and now Thelwell now. But, you know, what are Thelwell's fingerprints on Neil Mopay? Possibly, you know what I mean, in terms of, like, on the list of players, you know, Premier League proven, that sort of thing. You know, these sort of... You know, Onana, he's clearly, that screams like someone like Thelwell, maybe, that was you know, looking to sign him, and he was on the list. You know, that's where we should be as a club, isn't it? Going in after someone like Onana, paying whatever we pay for him, 25, 30 million, and then selling him for a profit. You know, that's doing good business. That's how you do it. And you know, you just got to hope that those two are joined, like I said, joined at the hip in terms of, you know, we've clearly been looking for players, clearly been scouting for players. You know, we just got to go after our targets and hopefully get, you know, players in each position. I'd feel a lot more confident if we went in with, you know, roughly two players for every position going into next season. I'm not saying they have to be, you know, top quality, but you know what I mean? I'd feel like if I suddenly, like, for example, we had that Goycalo and we had another striker, potentially even another forward as well. And then we had a couple of wingers. Then we had, you know, some decent fullbacks as backup. You know what I mean? I think Mikhailenko could probably go. Rumours are that he may go. And I wouldn't be surprised anyway, to be honest, because, you know, in modern day football, you need more attacking fullbacks. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up going. But then I'd want to see two decent shouts. You look at someone like Brighton going in and get Estupiñán. Had anyone have heard of Estupiñán before he signed for Brighton? No. You know what I mean? And he goes on and has one of, you know, one of the best left backs in the league. And then you look at lad, you know, we sold Luka Dean to Villa. Straight away, Emre probably doesn't really fancy him defensively. Goes and signs Moreno. And Moreno again, what one of the best left backs in the league in the last half of the season. You know, that's what I mean. There's players out there that are within our reach. You know, we don't have to be going out and spending, I mean, Chelsea money. That we couldn't anyway. But you know what I mean? There are players out there where if we could get those sort of players, you know, I'd feel way more confident then. But my worry is that we've, you know, like I said before, the Moise Keane money, you know, the Anthony Gordon money, the Richarlison money, now potentially the Onana money, then the Pickford money, thinking, how much of that are we going to realistically be able to spend? Or if we are going to be able to spend, how many players has that got to stretch across? That's five players I've listed out. Have we got to sign 10 with the same money? You know what I mean? That's the legitimate concern, you know. And if that is the case, which I don't think it's far off, then we have to be very, very savvy with it, don't we? And I just hope to God we don't do what we normally do, where we wait till the last, or we're forced to wait till the last few days of the season because we just, you know, we're offering to pay it on Klarna over 20 years. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what you think, Pete, but I just think that they do need to, you know, go into that first game of the season. You know, if we are selling Pickford, all of us would hate it. But we just get it done. Don't wait till the last day of the season. You know what I mean? Just get it done. If he is going, and he, you know, get the money in and go and get his replacement straight away. Have it lined up the day after, so we've got someone coming in straight away.
Well, I think you're spot on. Like you say, the last two windows have shown how not to do it. And I know there've been unique circumstances about, you know, around those windows, but particularly the last two in terms of FFP and. Again, there's not a great deal of clarity, is there, in terms of where, you know, where we stand in regards to FFP. And you lads might have seen that. I mean, I thought it was bizarre, but you know, apparently the financial regulation breach is regarding unpaid tax relating to the stadium, not to player income ins and outgoings, which, you know, I suppose blew my mind a little bit, because it's very different from the narrative that surrounded the last couple of windows. So it's really hard to know what's going on and what position we're in. And usually, going into a transfer window, we've got a pretty good idea, haven't we, of how much we've got to spend. You know, people, you know, usually do the sums, you know, looking at the kind of season activity and who we're expecting to go and what's going on with contracts. So usually as a fan base, we have a fairly good idea around, you know, who the key targets are for which positions and roughly how much we, we have to spend. And I think there's a real mass uncertainty, you know, about what our financial position is. And like, you know, Lee was saying then, we're in this kind of mass uncertainty where we could be losing, you know, one, two, maybe more key first team players. We've got a threadbare squad, and we're not sure if we're even going to be able to, to fill those positions. So it just feels utterly precarious. And you know, I'm not expecting the club to work miracles, but the best thing they can do is, again, learn the lessons of the recent past, have better communications with the fan base, particularly in terms of the board and things at the kind of higher structural level of the club. But also, you know, try and be active in the market. You know, it might be that they don't want to reveal their hand too clearly, but it's really, really difficult not knowing what position we're going to be in going into that first game of the season. And like you said, Mike, it could potentially be a really nervy time. We're coming up to transfer deadline day, you know, a couple of fixtures deep. Not knowing if we're going to be able to bring enough quality in.
Yeah, it's a poor position that we find ourselves in yet again. And like Lee had said about the the players that we'd sold for the money that we'd sold them for, you know, the £45 million for Anthony Gordon has been eaten up, it seems. Everton are going to be in profit for the 22-23 financial year, which, oh yeah, you know, fantastic. You know, it puts us in a better position from that perspective. But there's clearly a bit of a cash flow issue here within the club, and within all the uncertainty surrounding the investments, the surrounding the board, the chairman. You know, they've announced this week that the hearing's been set for the 25th of October in regards to the financial or potential breach of financial rules. So that's hanging over our head now. We've got a definite date. I'm sure the club are working on the defence, but who knows? But apparently the club are pretty sure, like you said, Pete, it seems to be relating to tax implications surrounding the stadium. Absolutely baffling. You know, what it makes no sense. It doesn't even feed into profits and sustainability and FFP. So what's going on? So the whole thing stinks to me, basically. And we've had more coverage as a football club for this one alleged breach than Man City have had for 115 different charges. So it's just, this is when you start to question, you know, about things being a witch hunt. Because we've been close to the trapdoor for the last two seasons, because obviously we've ran things very, very close, potentially over with the financial side of things, it's getting to the point now where I think Everton as a football club are just pissing everybody off. every other club in the Premier League, other sets of fans, directors, whoever it might be. They annoy us on a daily basis. But it's a terrible situation we find ourselves in a summer transfer window, looking like we haven't got a great deal of money to throw around at all, potentially again missing out on key targets, and also not making any of many moves in the transfer window in terms of free transfers as we speak. Very early, don't get me wrong, it's very early, I know that, but we are seeing teams, Brighton in particular, making early moves. And I just, like we said, I just don't want to throw away points in those first three games because we haven't got our transfer targets in and we're waiting until the final week of the window to bring players in. We cannot afford to throw points away and give up and just say, well, you know, it doesn't matter. We'll be better in a few weeks when we get a few more players in. That can't be the approach. It's got to be totally aligned between manager and Kevin Thelwell. And it's got to be players who are brought in to make this side more balanced, more competitive, and give us a season where, you know, which is going to be the last full season at Goodison Park, give us a season where, as fans, we aren't going the game on edge every other week at Goodison Park. We can enjoy the final full season at Goodison and get some pride back into our football club once again, because at this moment in time, we're still a laughing stock.
Yeah, when you caveat that, when you look at, like, yes, you know, the rumours are Newcastle have got a minimum 150 million to spend without selling any players. You know, they've just announced a shirt sponsor deal. I don't know whether you guys saw that from a Saudi owned, you know, part of the investment fund business. That you know, I don't think they even had a website when they announced it. You know what I mean? It's just Man City, and now they've released a website. And if you read the statement on it, it's written by some guy doing a GCSE project. You know what I mean? And I just look at that going, well, here we go, another state-owned club essentially now being able to do what they want, inject money in through fake companies or shell companies. You know, rumours, you know, again, rising again that the Glazers are going to sell to the Qataris. I mean, can you imagine how powerful Man United would be if the Qataris took over that football club? I mean, yeah, I hate to say it, you'd almost push back up and go home. Because, you know, they will then, the spending power they will have, which is already significant anyway, based on the obviously inflated turnover they've had over the years they've been in the Premier League. You know, they'll be able to just go out and bid for any player they want, the Mbappes of this world and people like that. So it's, you know, rumours again, Chelsea spending, apparently going to spend fortunes again this summer. You know, there's already rumours that they're being linked with the likes of Neymar now, aren't they, and people like that, and even Mbappe himself. Yeah, you know I mean, so then you're just thinking like this is just nuts. You know, we can't even confirm the signing of Connor Cody for £4.5 million. I mean, and then you've got other clubs out there going out spending that sort of money. And look, don't get me wrong, a lot of these problems are self-inflicted for the way we've been run. Don't get me wrong, but and the lack of commercial deals and got that. But it still makes you look at the game and just think, like, how can you even compete, certainly with the upper echelons like that, with when it comes to finances? And then we all know, whether you like it or not, you can have the best coach in the world, but you still got to have players. You still got to have decent players in there. You know what I mean? And you know, coaches have got to be able to work with players. And look, there is a mark. If we had Piv on here right now, he'd be probably saying, look, there are players out there. Brighton have showed it. Other clubs have showed it. But at the same time, we can't even sort out a board of directors. Never mind going outside and, you know, being clever in the transfer market. So, look, let's not try and be too doom and gloom. We can maybe look at this picture maybe in a few weeks and we might have a few players through the door. You know, we might be looking like we're resembling a football club again. But right now, it just worries me a little bit. And I think that's the overriding feeling, isn't it, between all of us? It's a bit just a sense of worry again, isn't it?
It is. And that's it, isn't it? We're all concerned about the state of the club and what's happening behind the scenes and what impression that gives to us as fans and potential players who are going to come through the door. So there's a lack of trust there, which has been built over a number of years. But let's see how the next few weeks play out. But that's us for this week. Enjoy getting back on after a few weeks break, where it's been nice and relaxed, that's for sure. And we'll be back ourselves at some point over the next few weeks or so, once more things happen at Goodison Park and Finch Farm and the players start to return for pre-season. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues, Three Opinions, One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.